Budget presentation, is that Chris, or are you going to handle that as well, Secretary?
So I will kick things off, and then I will turn it over to Chris and the directors, so. We'll just wait a second to get this pulled up. Alrighty, thank you, Chris and Chris, Chris Squared, alright. Alright, let's get started here, then we'll turn this over to the directors. Just want to start off by saying what a year it has been, and I just came out of Senate Ag here this morning giving a very similar presentation, and really it comes down to it's a great presentation to give because it has been a great year. The response to COVID-19, folks escaped to the outdoors, and we've seen that in our parks, we've seen that in our fishing access points, we've seen it across the state. Folks got outdoors and they got a chance to utilize the great facilities, the great opportunities that our department provides, and we're very happy to present some of those data and some of those results today. We're going to talk a lot about the year we had and the year we're hoping to have moving forward into 2021. So how did COVID-19 impact our year? What are the things that, how did we respond to it? Really what it came down to is under Governor Noem's leadership, we kept the outdoors open. We kept our fishing access points open. We kept our campsites open. And we had an incredible opportunity to provide an escape. And we implemented opportunities to reduce, obviously, contact. We did the social distancing piece. We had our users become more self-sufficient. We used the Iron Ranger program a little more than we have in the past. And at the end of the day, folks took advantage of being more self-sufficient, so we're going to utilize that similar model moving forward as well. We did delay projects. We delayed some construction projects. We looked at $4.5 million in the road projects that we set aside for the time being, because this all happened right during the construction season when it started. As far as we just were in the world of unknown, so we put a hold on a lot of those things. We're excited to get those things back up and running here for this next construction season, and I know our engineers are chomping at the bit to start getting some of those projects off the project list. So all in all, though, in the parks world especially, and in the wildlife division world, it was an all-hands-on-deck approach. Operationally, we did it. We did all of this. We took on all the visitations and all the camping reservations and all the increased fishing pressure with a reduced staffing capacity. So much so, about 24,000 hours less that we've seen in our seasonal workforce in the park side. We've seen about 17,000 hours less in the wildlife side. And I'm very, very, very proud of staff for stepping up to the plate, because what this meant is we had educators, we had office staff, we had regional supervisors. All the folks were pitching in. They were cleaning the bathrooms, mowing the grass, working the entrance booths, ensuring that those recreational opportunities were there for folks, so when they did escape from the pandemic, the nightly news, there was a place to go, and that was the outdoors. So really, really proud of staff, and I can't thank staff enough. I know the directors are very, very thankful for all the hard work over the last 12 months, and we're excited to keep that momentum rolling into 2021. So how many people did come? It was pretty incredible, really. You can see there from that graph, we had under 6.5 million visitations to our park system in 2019. In 2020, we're up to 8.3 million. We've really seen a lot more park users. We've seen new park users. We've seen folks that not just came one time, they came 10 times. The escape was the outdoors, and that's a testament to our visitation numbers there in front of you. And not only visitation, not only the day use side of things, but the camping world as well. Park reservations were up significantly as well, up 30% in most cases. We had in 2019 close to 300,000 reservations made. In 2020, we had upwards of 380,000. So you can see the significant increase there. Again, I was a family that took advantage of this opportunity myself. Took my 3-year-old twins and my 1-year-old camping. And it was a blast. We made some incredible memories, and again, I can't thank staff enough for those outdoor opportunities we all get to provide to the visitors and the residents of this great state. What about hunting? You know, I'm proud to say this is probably the first time we can see this graph starting to rebound in a long time. I mean, if this graph of small game resident hunters was graphed out in the late 90s or even early 90s, you would see a slight decline every year. And this is the first time in a long time we can say things are turning around. And that's a testament to our residents picking up the shotgun, going chasing those pheasants. The bird numbers were really good. They're still good. The season's still open thanks to this commission. I know a lot of folks have taken advantage of that great opportunity. But we did. We've seen the rebound of resident license sales for the first time in a long time. So we're happy to see that, and we're hoping that trend continues. And the same could be said for fishing. We've seen a really big spike in angler use days, and license sales, fishing license sales in particular. You can see there in 2019, we were just under 100,000. There, that number is 118,000. And the fish started to really bite, too. That was another great thing. The Missouri River, the mighty Missouri, I say all the time, really had some great fish being caught out of it, and they continue to bite today. We had a good salmon bite on Lake Oahe, and there's just been a lot of positives in the fisheries world, and I want to thank all the fish staff for contributing to that as well. We're a fishing destination, and that will continue, and we're very proud of that resource. And non-resident small game, this is the number we always watch very closely. 37%, again, of the Wildlife Division's budget, and we'll go over the budget pieces of that, are from non-resident licenses. So non-resident small game licenses in particular are a big part of how we operate, how we put habitat on the landscape, how we enroll public lands for the users to use. And at the end of the day, we've seen a fairly status quo number, very similar to last year. We didn't go down significantly, we didn't go up significantly. And in the wake of COVID and the travel issues that folks somewhat had, the corporate hunts that were canceled, those sorts of things, we're proud of this number. At the end of the day, we're proud of this number. We're hoping this number rebounds in 2021, obviously. This winter is going to help us out with bird numbers. It's been open so far, and hopefully it stays at least a bit open for the long run and into the nesting season. But this is still good news, not bad news, and we're going to build off this moving into 2021. And non-resident fishing was a very similar trend as to resident fishing, and a lot of this non-resident fishing came in the months of April, May, and June. April, May, and June, states were on lockdown. Many states closed their fishing season for a moment in time. They closed their boat ramps. They closed everything in some states. So what did those anglers do? They came to South Dakota because we remained open. And thank this commission for keeping things open. I know we had conversations back in May and April about that, about, you know, keeping things open. So it paid off. We're very excited to have these folks come back to the great state. I hope they had a good time when they were here and caught some fish. And with that, I am going to turn things over to our numbers guy, Chris Peterson, the Director of Finance, and we'll take questions at the end. So Chris, take it away, sir.
Thanks, Kevin. Chairman and Commissioners, Chris Peterson, Finance Officer for your Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. What an exciting set of charts and slides that Secretary Roebling got to just share with all of you. As our Secretary just went through all of our legislative bills, one of the other big components of each legislative session revolves around the budget, the discussion of the governor's overall budget, the discussion of each agency budget. And in fact, on February 9th, as we get further into the legislative session, our department will be presenting our budget recommendation through the governor, to the Appropriations Committee of the legislature mid-morning on February 9th. So, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, if you're able to attend, that's great. Otherwise, it will be broadcast live on the internet, too, for all of you to listen in. But our Game, Fish, and Parks Department has a unique budget when you consider other state government budgets. We're kind of a hybrid. And what I mean by that is what we have on the slide here. The budget for Game, Fish, and Parks basically operates with six main budget units or main program areas. We listed them on the slide here. The Division of Administration, which includes the expenditures for the commission, the finance office, legal counsel, engineering, communications, those type of functions, that budget or those budget levels are set by the legislature. It goes through the full process. But then we have the Division of Wildlife under the direction of Tom Christianman with the operations for the full Division of Wildlife, and then a second budget, the 0612 budget in the middle of this page, for the projects for the Wildlife Division. Those two budgets for wildlife, that budget authority does reside with all of you as the Commission of Game, Fish, and Parks. So we have a budget so far of the three, one controlled by the legislature, two with the authority with the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. But then we have the Scott Simpson's world, the two budgets controlled and operated as the State Parks and Recreation Operations Budget and the State Parks and Recreation Capital Development Project Budget. Both of those budgets are also under the authority of the legislature. And then you have the Snowmobile Trails Program Budget that is also under the authority of all of you. So in fact, that's the hybrid component here, that this is a unique agency where three of the main functions of the department are controlled by the legislature and the other three controlled by the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. So really what we're going to do here as an informational item for all of you next is go through the budget, and we start our process. Another challenge for our department is we operate all of our license sales that Kevin just went through, license sales and camping and permits. A lot of that, because it's convenient, operates on a calendar year. But as a state government entity, we operate our budget on a fiscal year basis that starts July 1 and ends June 30th. So a lot of the information that was in Kevin's charts and slide, those things were kind of happening, and you always try to project your budgets basically through the process about a year to a year and a half out. So where we are with the process is the next slide here that we have up. It's the overall budget for the entire department. Scott and Tom will take over some division-specific information here shortly, but for the overall department, on the top of the page, middle column, you'll see a column that says FY 2021 budgeted, and you'll see the dark number there, $99.7 million. That represents the total department budget as we sit here today. We're about halfway through current year, $99.7 million. You can see on the right-hand side of the page, the recommendation and our request for the budget, the expansion, the growth for the department, is a recommended growth of $9.6 million. I would be the first to tell you that in my years with the department, this is probably the largest budget growth amount that we've ever asked for that I've seen within the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. But the main component that should provide comfort to all of you and the citizens of our state is that $9.6 million comes with money in hand, dollars in hand, a lot of it. We wouldn't be asking for budget increases if we didn't have dollars to go along with those increases. So that's what we're going to take an opportunity for with you today, Mr. Chairman, to walk you through those budget growth areas and where those dollars come from, where they go throughout the budget. If I just walk just briefly, Mr. Chairman, through the numbers in the top right-hand corner of the page, as I talked about those six main budget functions, they're listed at the top here. Administration, wildlife, info, that's the operations side. Wildlife development improvement, again, that's the project side. State parks and recreation, operations there. Parks and Rec, Development Improvement Projects, and Snowmobile Trails. Now, if we kick over to the right-hand side of the page, we'll see the budget for the Division of Administration, $4.6 million. It's growing by $1,000, right? $1,014 growth there. Really, the only growth we're asking for within the Division of Administration is this division helps make the bond payments for bonds, kind of like a mortgage, you know, a borrowing we did government instead of taking out loans. Basically, we issued revenue bonds. Years ago, we issued bonds to do a lot of millions of dollars worth of renovations at our fish hatcheries. Our Division of Administration is set up to make that payment. Basically, our mortgage payment on those hatcheries is going up by $1,014. So, a very small increase for our Division of Administration. Above and beyond that, then, we can work down those numbers on the right-hand side of the page. You'll see $7.4 million of budget increase for the Wildlife Division. Again, one of the biggest budget increases across the past number of years you'll see for the Wildlife Division. But what happened last legislative session? The approval of the habitat stamp or the habitat certification fee that we expect to generate in any given year somewhere between $5 and $6 million of additional revenue that will go to all of those habitat enhancement projects. So this is playing catch up a little bit. The habitat stamp fee is in place. We're adjusting the budget so that we can put those dollars in. We have the budget authority to put those dollars on the ground and put them to good work. So $7.4 million in this budget process. So, Mr. Chairman, as we go through these items, where we are today with these budget increases, the only thing that really hasn't been decided yet, the budget needs to be voted on, of course, but the governor's overall package for like a raise or a salary policy for state employees, that comes through and Game Fish and Parks participates in that at the same level of every other state government agency. So at this point in time, the governor has recommended across the board a 2.5% salary increase for state employees. So as they go through the legislative process, if and when that salary package gets approved, these numbers would, on the salary side, grow additionally upwards of 2.5% for the salaries. And then when we actually get done with the legislative session, we'll bring this budget back to all of you and ask for you to formally adopt those pieces that are under your authority for wildlife and snowmobile trails. So there'll be some adjustments, but really from here forward, the adjustments should be for the salary package. So Mr. Chairman, a couple more quick items to go through there. On the page, we have a $10,000 reduction for the Wildlife Development Improvement Budget. That is just related to the specific projects we're planning to do for the Wildlife Division for the budget that starts here next July 1. And Tom will have a slide on what some of those main projects are. The State Parks and Operation Budget is growing by $840,000. Really, in this budget, we're playing a lot of catch-up. The fiscal year 20 budget that covered part of our calendar year 2019, that was the flood year in South Dakota. We had parks closed, we had bridges out, it just wasn't a good camping season, and we saw some kind of declines in participation that year. So in turn, when we were back here last year talking to all of you and the legislators, we were not growing the Parks Division budget at all. Now, with a good year under our belts, we need to play some catch up on expenditures like buying equipment that we didn't buy last year and just covering inflationary type increases. These are the good expenses. When you need to buy more supplies for the bathrooms and you're spending more electricity because you're having more campers, this is catch up on those inflationary things in the Parks Division. So that covers the $840,000 increase for the State Parks Division. And then, Mr. Chairman, the last number I'll cover on this page, this slide, is the $1.4 million of additional project costs for the State Parks and Recreation Division. Again, we'll get into some of those projects here in a few slides. So now we can kind of move on. Those are just a lot of numbers on the page. The next slide just takes those, breaks them into a couple pie charts, just to give you another view of some of that same information. The left-hand side of the left-hand chart here shows you how those budgets kind of break out from a perspective of about $59 million for wildlife operations, $22.8 million for the parks operations, about 28% of the budget, the wildlife CD, that's the capital development, of about $2.6 million. The parks capital development budget is $13.3 million, and snowmobile trails, a $1.4 million budget, and then our admin division at $4.7 million. So all of those budget pieces break into, especially when we're talking with the legislature appropriates those budget items in each division or budget unit, each program, but then they appropriate them on three different funding sources: the state general fund tax dollars, any type of money that comes through the federal fund, and the dollars that we generate as a department. They consider that other funds. So you can see the biggest piece of the pie there. $75.5 million of budget authority on the other funds. So all of those bar charts we just looked at, and they were all pointing in the right direction. Those are the revenue dollars that the department's generating across fishing licenses and camping and park entrance licenses, and that's this part of the budget, the yellow part of the chart here, of course. We're pretty proud that our state, probably more than any, with the Fish and Wildlife Agency and State Parks Division, operates with very little need from general fund state taxpayer dollars, and that's what's in that GF column on the slide there. So now we're going to just take this and go one level deeper for all of you in more detail and get into each of these divisions. We'll start with the admin division. Go ahead and move one more for me. We broke out the admin division into our main functions. Something that we haven't always included in our budget presentations, but we're going to take a little extra time with all of you today to kind of break out the main functions of staff, the things we do, the interactions we have with the citizens and governments and agencies and those kind of things, just kind of get in a little bit into all those individuals that we have within our department. When we get into the middle of the park season, the summer season, we're one of the bigger agencies in the state of South Dakota government. We'll have well over 1,000 employees on the payroll. Just a lot of people doing a lot of things. We thought we'd spend a little time going through that. For the admin division, really have four main functions. The central finance office, we've got five FTE in there. And we're talking FTEs, that's a full-time equivalent position. It's about 2,088 hours per person there. So we've got five full-timers in the central finance office. Our communications office has a budget of 7.5 FTE. The secretary's office with the secretary and support staff, legal counsel, we have 8.6 FTE in the office of the secretary, and then the engineering section that provides all of that kind of design and engineering work for both our divisions of parks and wildlife at 7.5 FTE. Here's just a little summary of what we talked about there. I think I've covered most of the top of the slide already between the different functions. I should mention, kind of in the middle of the slide there, in the secretary's office or in this division of administration, we also have the executive support that you guys interacted with as well for our South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation and our Second Century Fund. So our executive director there, Lisa Weyer, she's funded as a budgeted FTE within our office of the secretary as well. So at the bottom of this slide, we just referenced one more time, that way the $1,014 increase for the bond payment. We can move on some more. Keep going. Mr. Chairman, we're going to shift over. We'll let Tom Kirschman cover kind of the same types of slides for you. And we'll do this two more times with Tom and Scott and let you see the details of the Wildlife Division and the Parks Division.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate that. Again, Tom Kirschman, Division of Wildlife Director. For those of you listening in, Commissioners, the first slide here for the Wildlife Division is, again, continuing this conversation that Chris just started and looking at our staffing and FTEs. When I look at the Wildlife Division, all the different things that we do from wildlife management, fisheries management, habitat and access, our law enforcement education, we have multiple successful and highly sought after programs. We work with thousands of landowners. We work with all kinds of public or people from the public. It's probably impossible to actually tally how many public contacts all of our agency staff make throughout a given year. But when you think of all the successes that we have and the valuable and great programs and projects that we have, the reason they are so successful is because all the folks that make up this pie chart right here. Our most valuable asset, in my opinion, is all the staff that we have within the total agency and in the respective divisions. And I'm sure Scott will attest to that when he starts talking about the Parks and Recreation Division as well. This particular pie chart here gives somewhat of that breakdown of the FTEs for those respective programs or disciplines and the work that we do. And I won't go into detail of each and every one of them, but as you can see, there's a couple of them that really stick out. The Fisheries and Aquatic Habitat Management, over 40 FTE there. Conservation Officers, over 73. It's a big part of our agency. They're the face of our agency. Obviously, a big primary role of their work is the enforcement of the rules and regulations, but boy, they are invaluable when it comes to the landowner contacts, building relationships out there, and working with other agencies and the public in a whole. Wildlife damage management, again, is another big one, a little over, just under 33 FTEs. Wildlife management, over 41. Again, a lot of the things that we do that provides those recreational opportunities for our sportsmen and women in South Dakota, those that visit. Terrestrial habitat and access, one of our key priority items within the Wildlife Division, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the commission agenda when we get into the information items. One thing I do want to point out, and something that we have been talking internally, and Chris and Secretary Roebling already mentioned, was the fact of the volunteers that help us throughout the year on many of our projects. And in the Wildlife Division, we have a lot of volunteers that help us, from Hunt Safe to folks that help us on some various research projects out there to education programs that we implement across the state. You look at it, just a little over 9 FTEs from voluntary and volunteer support out there from people in the public. That equates to just under 19,000 hours of work that those folks help us in implementing our mission and making sure that our programs and projects are very successful. So we owe a huge debt of gratitude to those folks in helping us complete and be successful in what we do. Again, here's just a quick summary of the various positions from all the wildlife biologists, fisheries biologists, our wildlife damage specialists, the technicians, all those folks that work on the various projects, habitat and access within the fisheries, the hatcheries. We have all kinds of specialists when it comes to habitat, both in our public lands, private lands, our GIS folks. Again, I mentioned earlier how big a role our conservation officers play in the success of the Wildlife Division, as well as that assists within the parks as well. Licensing permitting is a big part, although it's a small number of people in our agency. When you think of the revenue that comes in from hunting and fishing license in the tune between $60 and $70 million, and we just have a handful of people that truly work within the licensing, it's pretty incredible. And they do a ton of work on that, and without their work, a lot of those issues would not be resolved, and we cannot get those hunting and fishing opportunities out to our users. Our human dimension specialists, our outdoor educators, and then, as I just mentioned a few moments ago, about all the volunteer assistance that we get from the outdoor campuses, the work that we do, archery programs in the school, and obviously Hunt Safe across the state. So the revenue that comes in the Wildlife Division, you can see it's pretty obvious on this pie chart where the bulk of that revenue comes from. Number one, the biggest that you can see, the two big ones are the non-resident hunting licenses at about 31% of our revenue, and it also equates our federal funds, the Pittman, Robertson, Dingle, Johnson, at 31% of our revenue. And then next in line would be that resident hunting licenses at 15%. And then when you look at the resident, non-resident fishing combined, makes 13% of the overall revenue for the department. So when we talk about those non-resident small game hunters, it's a significant and important part of our overall budget and our overall revenue that we bring in to conduct all the programs and projects that we do in the Wildlife Division. And so that's no surprise to you as to why we often talk about those non-resident small game licenses and also the big game licenses that our non-resident hunters take advantage of. For the capital development that Chris mentioned, it's a smaller part of our overall budget. And then there's also the operations side of this thing. So capital development is at about 4%. That's when we look at some of the infrastructure items, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Looking at it from some other disciplines, from wildlife management at 17% of the overall budget. Habitat and access is a big one, 33%. We continue to want to do more and more for habitat, put more access out there, which will provide more opportunities for our hunters and anglers. Fish management is a big one, 17%, which also includes our hatchery work and putting the work into production of fish and doing the stockings out there to provide those angling opportunities. And the public service right at 29-30%. That again includes our law enforcement staff and our education and outreach and those things that we do there. Quickly, Chris talked a little bit about from the wildlife operations budget adjustments. As he said, this is probably one of the largest adjustments we've seen in the Wildlife Division quite some time. A couple of key factors here. Number one, if you look in that far right-hand column, the change from fiscal 2021, you see $1 million under Wildlife Administrative Services. That's a direct reflection of the e-commerce system that we're going to be talking more about here in just a few minutes. That would be that portion from the Wildlife Division and annual contribution to that overall e-commerce system for our licensing, that one-stop shop. So that was one adjustment that was put in there. The two big ones that equate to a little over, or about $6 million, a little over $6 million, is under the aquatic management and terrestrial management, and that goes directly back to the habitat stamp. And our projections of that habitat stamp on those different license types and those two disciplines, we're estimating approximately $2.9 million for aquatic management and $3.5 million for the actual terrestrial management. With that will be some additional funds from federal aid and federal funds going to matching those efforts and doing that. But the two big things from the habitat stamp on the terrestrial side would be doing, number one, the full enrollment of the James River watershed, or the CREP, with the opportunity to now go from about the 75,000 acres we currently have enrolled to that maximum cap of 100,000. And then the other big portion of that would be doing habitat projects on our game production areas. I will share with you right now, our staff have been working very diligently on a plan for those habitat stamp funds. And on the terrestrial side, right now I'll be meeting with staff to talk about a list of projects from food plots, woody habitat, to grazing infrastructure, to access points. That list, cumulative, goes to about $3 million right there. So we're going to be taking a look at that and see which projects we can implement for this year based on the funds we have. And the same thing is holds true on the aquatic side. Multiple small dams projects, small lake projects, habitat and access for aquatic, and then we have some larger scale projects like Lake Elvin and Lake Mitchell that we're looking at and considering and moving forward into the future. So again, at that bottom line, right at about $7.4 million is a change in the overall budget for the wildlife operations side of things. Again, here's a quick rundown of what I probably just touched base on, with the habitat stamp being a big part of those overall adjustments to the wildlife operation. Again, the $1 million for the cost of the new e-commerce system for licensing, hunting, angling, parks reservation. Again, we'll have a more detailed presentation on that. And then the bottom one there is a 1.5 decrease in contractual services with offsetting increases in travel budget. I may turn this over to Chris to give you a quick update on what that actually means and why that's occurring within the budget.
Mr. Chairman, not to get into much detail on this today, but absolutely when we go in front of the Appropriations Committee and work with the LRC fiscal staff, we're going to be talking about this budget adjustment that they're going to see as we kind of get into the actual programs. We're doing this across all the different programs in Parks and Wildlife, both. Our department, with everything we do, we put a lot of miles on the road. We have a lot of vehicles that do a lot of things. As we go through, and our department does, like a lot of state government agencies, we go through audits at the federal level. We get our federal funds audited most years, and absolutely the state auditors come in and do an audit as well. The last year when my staff was going through just the audit of expenditures, as accounting rules and procedures and federal laws will dictate, they asked us to change where we coded our expenses for our vehicles. A lot of the vehicle expenses today and for years we have captured under the contractual services part of our budget as a fleet management expense. What the state auditor's office had asked us to do was, can you start recording those expenses under your travel budget instead of contractual? So literally what we're doing here in the budget is you're going to see a travel budget increase of $1.5 million and a corresponding contractual service budget decrease of the same amount, basically. And it's just to align up with what auditors see with their kind of provisions as they audit government expenditures. So it's a net to zero, but it looks big when you see a travel budget increase of $1.5 million.
Thanks, Chris. Next slide, Chris. Quick one on this, capital development. We see a reduction of $10,000 in our capital development for the wildlife division. Chris, next slide. Some major projects within the capital development for looking at FY22 really revolves around some facilities. For example, the Rapid facilities and key projects, the Rapid Creek Restoration Phase Number 2 of $300,000. This is a neat project out in the Black Hills on Rapid Creek where we're doing shoreline restorations and habitat work along there. We have a lot of good partners from the Black Hills region assisting us on this. But this is a big one in respect to a fishery standpoint. You see about $1 million worth of funds would be going towards the Blue Dog Hatchery and some advancements and adjustments and updates that we need to do to that facility to keep that functioning at its highest level and efficiencies for producing fish for stocking efforts. We've got a lot of statewide dam and maintenance and building maintenance across the state. We continue to work on small dams. And then there's some smaller scale type facility projects like, for example, we've got some parking lot repairs at some of our buildings and offices across the state. And then another big one that we do on an annual basis is just a little under $300,000 directed towards shooting facilities and working with third parties in doing trap ranges, shooting ranges, things like that with multiple partners. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Scott and he'll cover the Parks Division.
Anyone need a breather before I get us caught up?
Okay. We kind of flew by the 2 o'clock open forum. If you want to wrap up, if we have anybody online waiting, John, for that, maybe we should not keep our folks that are online waiting and get to the open forum. John, it's my understanding that we have one of the two petitions that you're going to take action on today that is only available for a short window of time, and so to accommodate that petitioner, we're going to allow them at that time to make some brief comments on their petition.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, again, Tom Kirshner, Wildlife Division Director, thank you for that allowance. I believe Mr. Cody Warren from Rapid City is on the line, and he is limited in the amount of time that he's able to spend with the commission today, and would ask for your allowance to just say a few remarks on his petition and then at least give him the opportunity to share his reason and rationale for submitting the petition, as we'll take that up a little bit later on. So, Mr. Warren, if you're on the phone, we turn it over to you for a few minutes to speak to the commissioners on your petition.
Hello, thanks, Mr. Chairman, and hello to the commissioners. Thanks for taking this time to listen to me here. I've seen in the past and this year hunting on the public land. That's all I do for big game in South Dakota. A lot of people are wearing full camouflage and a baseball hat. Some of the baseball hats are half covered in camo. They'll start walking, hunting, and throw a hoodie over top of their hat so they have no orange on. If they go sit in a draw or under a tree, it's tough to see them. I'm just asking that the commission goes along with our neighboring states and include a 400 square inch above the waist regulation. Some states require a hat and a vest or coat. I think one garment is not enough when it can be a hat. I've seen some YouTube videos of South Dakota hunters on public land and they have a hoodie over top of their hat. I think they're hard to see. If they're laying in the draw and someone else comes into that field a few hours later, they might not be seen. It's all a safety issue. Don't know where else to go from there. Wyoming has a one garment regulation, but theirs requires it to be seen from 360 degrees. South Dakota's does not require that. It just says one exterior garment. But Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, and Nebraska all require a minimum of 400 square inches, and two of those states require a hat along with a vest. So, with that being said, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. We appreciate your input on that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Warren, for taking the time to join the commission meeting today and present on your petition. That'll be on your agenda later on today, most likely, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. And if Mr. Katilnik, if there is nobody else, we can continue on with down the agenda at your pleasure. Okay. So that I'll turn it back over to Scott and continue on with the presentation.
I'll be the fastest portion of the presentation. Promise, Mr. Chair. Scott Simpson, Director of the Parks Division, kind of going to go through the same version of the slides that Tom went through. I know Chris covered a couple of those things, so I'll try to be as brief as possible. First slide that you're looking at, obviously, is our FTE allocation. It's very similar when you look at a lot of the wildlife slides. The one thing that really stands out as far as FTE allocation within the Parks Division, two things, I guess. Park operations, the seasonal allocation that you see there, 112 FTE allocated to seasonals. Because of the seasonal work that we have in the parks, we have a very large allocation of FTE to that seasonal group. What we look at from that seasonal 112 FTE, that's roughly 233,000 seasonal hours. We bring on about 430 seasonals each year to help us accomplish the work that we do in the Parks Division. It's a lot of extra hands in a short period of time, which is what we need. Not necessarily the year-round employee, but just the all hands on deck during the summer. The other big allocation there that I'd like to point out is the volunteer hours. Got this question in committee the other morning, and I didn't do a very good job of answering it, so I think that's probably the reason that it's not included in this pie chart. But we had 112,230 volunteer hours, which equated to 53, almost 54 FTE that were volunteer hours throughout the park system last year. That's incredible when you think that our entire staff right now, FTE allocation is 260, and we've got almost a fifth of those additionally that we rely on volunteers to do everything from some of the tech work that we have in the parks, whether that be mowing, cleaning, those kinds of things, campground hosts, working in the booths, working at interpretive centers, visitor centers. They're pulling weeds and doing everything else that we need them to do. And it's just a great relationship that we have with our volunteers, and we can't give them enough credit. You see the full-time allocation for parks operations, about 125 FTE. Next slide, Chris. I should mention too, about nine FTE for the Snowmobile Trails Fund, which is or Snowmobile Trails Program, which is a big portion of what we've got for FTE allocation. As you can see, I just want to list some of those jobs that we've got out there: parks and park managers, assistant park managers. They're the boots on the ground folks there every day in the facilities, in the areas, making sure that things go the way they're supposed to. We've got a pretty good team of pretty good sized team of park naturalists. Incredibly talented, do a lot of our interpretive work within the parks, as well as that outdoor education component. Conservation techs make the world go round, make sure that all of our equipment and facilities look good. As I mentioned, 430 seasonals, and then again, our volunteer support. Next up, talking about the revenue. Obviously, a vast majority of our revenue within the Parks Division, 50%, comes from those entrance fees, about $21 million a year. Pulling about $5 million off of promotions and concessions, which are obviously the big ones at Lewis and Clark and Custer State Park. Federal funds, about $6.4 million, mostly land and water conservation funds and RTP. Very small amount of general funds, and then the other big one, I guess, is motorboat fuel fund, which when folks purchase gas, there's an allocation to the boating world. A certain percentage is allocated for use on the water, and the department receives that, which we partner with some federal funds and put to work within our water-based budget. Operations and capital development. You can see that a vast majority of the dollars that come into the department are going back out on the ground in park operations, almost $30 million. So that goes to all the things we've been talking about. What makes us special when compared to the rest of the country, and that's our facilities, our areas, and making sure that they're properly maintained. It takes a bunch of people to do that, and that's primarily what that $30 million goes towards. The other... what is it? 31% goes towards our capital development budget, vast majority preventive maintenance, a very small portion of new development, and as I mentioned, about $2.3 million or 5% goes towards those water-based activities. Chris went over this pretty well. The increase within the Parks Division this year is about $800,000, $841,000. About $400,000 of that is for us to start to catch up on some capital assets that we didn't purchase last year and held back a little bit even the year before. We need to make sure that we keep our equipment and other things up to date, and we haven't maybe done what we should have over the last couple of years because we didn't know what those budget considerations look like with the pandemic and flooding and those kinds of things. So a portion of that is represented there, about $400,000. And then we just got some incremental increases within our regions. And again, a lot of that's because we didn't ask for an increase last year. Our costs go up, just as you know, as your home budgets grow every year. We maintained last year because it was a tight year, and this year we're looking for a little bit of increase, and especially so when we see the increase to use. So ultimately, we net out to about an $841,000 increase, which I think is pretty reasonable. As far as our budget request for this year, again, $1,600, less than general funds. Covered this pretty well, so I think we can go past this one, Chris. Capital development, we do see an increase of $1.4 million. That was a promise that I made to you guys, made it to the legislators, that when we took that fee increase here last year, that those dollars were going to go back into capital development. We were going to increase the level that we could get out there, take care of roads, take care of facilities, and those kinds of things. So that's where you see over, you know, over FY22 actuals. We're about $10 million this year. We're looking to go a little closer to that 13.3. Works out, the math works out there. We were anticipating that our fee increase would generate about $3 million a year. So that's what we're shooting for, is to, you know, that increased revenue to go back out on the ground and go towards infrastructure. Major components of our capital development budget, $11 million worth of other funds or park entrance licenses, primarily camping reservations, 2.3 in federal funds. About 85% of our total budget is preventive maintenance. It's not new construction. It's going back, as I stated before, going back into those facilities. Almost 50% of that is going back towards the roads. $6.6 million is what we're looking for in FY22 to go into the 325 miles of roads that we maintain within the park system. We do have an additional $500,000 that we use from Department of Transportation to take care of some of those road projects. $1.6 million worth of new development, primarily going to Palisades, and a little bit of that new development is going into the water-based budget at $400,000. Mentioned the Palisades project, preventive maintenance, you know, the road projects. We are going to redo the wildlife loop this year. That's almost $9 million. It's coming in at $2.1 million. We've got a couple of dams that need to be replaced. We're working up at Mina and out at Newell. Then we do have some, like I said, some water-based activities that we're going to take care of, and about $1 million worth of trail projects and shore stabilization projects. Snowmobile program. Snowmobiles are licensed every year. There's a percentage of that gas tax and some excise tax when snowmobiles are purchased. That's the primary funding for this program. This one's pretty short and sweet. We allocate the full allocation every year, guessing that we're going to get snow on December 15th and running an entire season costs us, we figured at about $1.3 million. We've never hit that number. We're not going to hit that number this year with the way the snow is going out in the hills. We're hoping that turns around a little bit and we can get out there and get a little more active. But it's pretty standard. $1.3 million every year. We don't quite spend that much. And usually we carry enough money to be self-sufficient every year. So it's a kind of a pretty no-brainer kind of a budget on the snowmobile trails program. Last thing, CSP Bison Center. We've talked about this one with you folks before, showing you this, but we did make it through the first step in the process in the legislature, got it through Senate State Affairs. We are asking for that $500,000 appropriation. I've had some starter conversations with some of the appropriations folks. We'll continue to work with them and make sure that we give this the best chance that it can have to get funded. I really feel like I'm really confident that we're going to get this one across the goal line here. We come with a private and public partnership where 90% of it is coming from private funds for a public facility. I think that's a pretty good relationship, and I hope that our legislators will agree with us by the time we get down to the end of the session. So I think that wraps it up. Turn it back to Eldon.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions for the commission, I know there was a lot of information there, so please feel free.
Commissioner Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, good presentation. Just curious, what effect on your budget did the departments taking over of Spring Creek and Roy Lake have?
That's a great question, Commissioner Sharp. We are working through some numbers right now. We're getting to our year-end numbers. We're having a little bit of trouble teasing out some numbers right now, but we know that we need to have those in hand when we go to appropriations. I've already gotten a heads up on that. I can tell you that from what I've seen, we had a real strong year both at Spring Creek and Roy Lake. It's just maybe making sure that we're including all the expense on that side. You know, it's real easy to say, well, we've got this much more revenue. But we took on some expense there. We've got to be able to, red-face test this thing and say, not only do we have some revenue, we have some additional expense. It's going to be, I'd hate to project a number right now. I know that we're paying it back. It's not going to be paid back, with the quick, easy math of just the revenue versus what the purchase price was. We've got to be a little more transparent than that. So we're still working through those numbers. As soon as we have them, I'll make sure that I share them with you.
I appreciate it. Just based on the visitation numbers, I think obviously the public was very receptive to the department centers in both those locations, and so congrats to you and your team. And I realize that, you know, the push to the outdoor activity last year was certainly a tailwind for us, but at the same time, I don't believe the numbers would have reflected what they do if the visitors were not really liking what they see when they got there. So congrats to you and your staff on taking that on and having a great success with it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Any other Commissioner Spring?
On the building that's going to be built by the Buffalo Corrals, the state was going to help out with $500,000. What part of the budget is the other part coming? Wasn't it $1 million we had to come up with? If I'm not wrong, maybe I'm wrong on that.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Spring, $4 million comes from a grant from the Helmsley Charitable Trust. They challenged us to come up with $1 million to match that $4 million grant. Walter Panzier and his wife donated the first $100,000. I think we've raised $170,000, so about $270,000 have been raised so far. That would leave us with another $230,000 to go on the private donation side. And then that would be matched with the $500,000 worth of general funds. So $4.5 million coming from private donations, $500,000 coming from the general fund through the legislature.
Scott, when you say we've raised another X over what Panzer's donated, does that come in through the Parks and Wildlife Foundation? And did they have an end gate goal for what they want to raise to help with that effort?
Mr. Chair, yeah, total of $500,000, first $100,000 obviously came from Mr. Panzer, so an additional $400,000 total through the foundation. So they're getting very close to that number. I visited with Dick Brown a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't think that they were going to have a whole lot of trouble drugging up the rest of that. It'd be great to have it in hand by the time we go to sign the paperwork on Senate Bill 54. At the end of the session.
Commissioner Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A follow-up question on that amazing-looking building. I think that the drawing you had up there was just gorgeous. My question is part of the budgeting process going to include an estimate, a good-faith estimate of the first 10 to 15 years of maintenance?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, we've definitely put together a budget for what it's going to cost us to operate the building. We're looking at about $7,500 a year, just in electrical costs and janitorial supplies and all those kinds of things. I can tell you that we have not looked at, will we need to refinish the floors at some point in time or redo the interpretive displays or anything like that. So purely it's what it's going to cost us operationally, and again, that's what we're looking at based on what the visitor center costs us out in Custer State Park right now. It's about that $7,500 a year. We're not looking to put any staff on. We're going to operate it with existing staff and reallocate some FTE. We haven't built anything in on that 15-year maintenance program, just purely what it costs operationally.
It might be possible for if it's going to be worked with the foundation to have them come up with an extra endowment of 100, 200 that could spin off the interest income off of that as a set aside for future maintenance needs, because there's going to be a window that needs to be replaced. There's going to be some road leakage. I mean, just typical owning a building, you know it better than I do. So I would just encourage some thought given to that if it would be possible, because I know historically a lot of generous donations that give buildings to the public end up not including any of the maintenance costs, and now all of a sudden that bill comes due and everybody's kind of going, oh shoot, wish we'd have thought of that. So just a consideration. I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on the budget as presented? Seeing none, we'll move on to...